Blog Talk Radio. Okay, that was Mona Garcia, the music of Mona Garcia, and the song was called Bittersweet. If you'd like to pick yourself up a copy of Mona's CD, Personal Journey, you can actually go to monagarciamusic.com, and it's pretty inexpensive. It's a beautiful, beautiful collection. So check it out, you guys. I am thrilled to have Amy Cavanaugh on with us tonight, and Amy is going to talk to us about mermaids, what it is to be a mermaid, and also some exciting plans that she has coming up with Raymond Moody, none other than Raymond Moody, who, of course, a lot of you know from his book, I believe it came out in the 70s, Life After Life. I remember my mother picked it up, and it was obviously one of the first collections on life after death, which was pretty cool. And then he came out with Reunions in 93 and continues to be a real important figure on the scene of life after death. And I think it's really cool that Amy has connected with him, and we're going to find out from her exactly what's going on. Meanwhile, you are tuned in to Supernatural Radio Show. I am your hostess, Corrine. And I will be having future hosts on with me, hopefully in the next couple weeks. We're not sure. I think we're going to have Riley Martin, UFO abductee, as our first guest on the with my new colleagues, or old new colleagues joining me. So we look forward to doing that. Meanwhile, if anyone would like to call in and ask Amy a question, the number is 818-369-0327. Okay, let's bring Amy on.
Hi.
Hello.
It's a little noisy out here because I had to ground myself by coming outside and taking a few hits off a cigarette.
Okay.
No better way to get in touch with my inner Native American. I lost track of time, which is what mermaids do. That mermaids can't keep track of time because they're like what Christina Nelson talks about all the time, elementals. They're one of the elementals. So they don't generally live in a world that has time. So I'm going to take one more hit, and then you won't hear all this background noise because I know Chris, Curious Times, is listening, and we know how she feels about background noise. So one more grounding thing here.
Okay, and for those who are not familiar with Amy, I can't imagine that there's many of you. Amy is a medium. She unfortunately lost her husband a few years ago. She makes contact with him probably weekly, if not daily. And she's really got into this realm of life after death and things like this in the past few years, and we're really glad that she shares her talents with us. So here's to you, Amy.
Thanks. It's fun to be here, and I loved the music. That was you should have seen me before I heard Mona's music. That was so beautiful. But I lost track of time. I'm running around. I'm like trying to find something to eat. I'm like, okay, the clock's ticking. There is time now. You're not out swimming in the sea. But for those of you who don't know me, it's kind of, there's no accidents. How I became a mermaid, I've always liked the sea, but my day job is very large company, and they pay attention to your social media. So instead of saying, oh, I work at, because I work at Reuters, the news service, I just put out with a mermaid at WeekyWatchy, which is an attraction down here in Florida where mermaids swim. It's like synchronized swimming underwater, very difficult. But so that sort of stuck. And then, like Corrine was saying, my husband died, and I just started getting and my life was never the same. And there's a good thing and a bad thing, like everything. So when I started getting these visitations, and somebody called me and said, I want you to be on my radio show. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm just one of the listeners who calls up and asks when my boyfriend's going to call. I'm not. Like, nope. Time to go. And that's when spirit calls you, it's not like an option. That's really important for people to understand. When these gifts start becoming awakened in you, it's because you're on assignment. So it's not like a say, oh, I would rather, you know, sit by the pool and drink pina coladas or something like that. You're on a very special assignment, and you need to pay attention, and that's what I did, and that's how I met you and Chris, and just my life is just, and Raymond Moody. So, but Keith came to me, that's my husband, my dead husband, one of my many dead people, and that's what I call them, is dead people. It's just like a loving term. Some people, they don't like it, but my main goal is to make people comfortable with the concept of dying, because Keith's death was really prolonged and unfortunate, and we had no idea what we were doing. I felt like that that woman in Gone with the Wind when she goes, Miss Scott, I know nothing about birth and babies, and that's how I felt. I was like, Keith, I don't know anything about dying, but you know, we figured it out.
Right.
And now, you know, and it was very sad. I don't want to make it sound like, oh, it was like the best ride at Disney World. There's a lot of sadness tied to it. But at the same time, there's a lot of wonder and a lot of amazement, and most of all, a lot of love. Our dead people love us so much, because stripped of the ego, love is a lot different. We call it, I always tell people, it's like a difference between, like, we're down here drinking Tang and calling it love, and they're up there drinking, like, the best fresh-squeezed orange juice ever. It's like the difference between Tang and orange juice, love here and love there. So he right. says to me, Amy, don't be a medium. Nobody likes mediums. Be a mermaid. So, you know, it went from there. But it's interesting, because the more I learn about mermaids, I learned that they are indeed elementals. And I didn't believe in elementals. I don't think I believed in mediums before all this happened. But that's another thing. Is, you know, you say, oh, I don't believe in elementals. I don't believe in ghosts. Doesn't mean, it's one of the things that us silly humans do, is we'll tell ourselves things over and over again, thinking that we make them true. And we make them true in our own minds, but we don't make them true universally. So
right.
then along came Raymond Moody. And it's interesting, because I became a hospice volunteer. Like, you have to wait a year after someone dies. In the middle of that, my brother died an equally prolonged, premature, and chaotic death. So I just started becoming like the tour guide. So I started volunteering at hospice, and I saw that hospice was just like what my hospice experience was when Keith and my brother were in hospice, was really just about the physical, just about the physical. And then spirituality, part of it comes in where you check a little box on the form and, you know, say what kind of religion you are, which for most people is like the Sunday school they went to 45 years ago. And so someone of that, you know, flavor of religion comes in and says some generic sales pitch, and you're supposed to feel better, and it's like, what, you know? Suddenly, all of this stuff that, you know, the afterlife, heaven, becomes important. And just hearing some sort of dogma or, you know, heavily spun rhetoric, it just sounds like Charlie Brown's parents or something. It's like, what? That doesn't even remotely make sense. It doesn't resonate to my experience, and it's not making me feel any better. In fact, I think many people, because I work with a lot of widows, if they were religious before their loss, it's a sure, they're, the fact that their religious understanding of the afterlife does nothing to bring them comfort in their time of loss, pretty much sends them heading away from the church, as opposed to, you know, finding great comfort in it. So.
Right. And when, Amy, when you went into the hospice arena, And I know you're working with Raymond Moody on a project, which, can you tell us about that project?
Yeah, that's what I was trying to segue back. But remember, sorry. I'm a mermaid. So good at this. We're really, we can hold our breath for a long time, which means we can go on unbelievable rants about nothing and think it's just a second. So again, file this under there are no accidents, and you know, there's fate and destiny, and then, you know, we navigate through our fate and destiny using our free will. Usually, you know, sometimes we hit and sometimes we go in the other direction. I go to this conference and I see Raymond Moody speaking in Orlando at Disney World, and it was really affordable. And then suddenly it got even more affordable because you could stay at Disney World at these hotels that are usually $800 a night for $100 a night. And next thing I know, I'm sitting in a room, and I think it was supposed to be a conference that had like 300 people because the room was set up for like a big conference room in a big hotel, and there was like 10 people there. And next thing you know, and I was late, like a half hour late because I was lost, because mermaids get lost. And then like a half hour later, Raymond Moody and I were like best friends. Like our eyes would light up because he'd say things, and it would like be like, yeah, I know that too. Like we were from the same planet. And he was talking, one of the things he was talking, the conference was called The Logic of Nonsense. And in addition to his work in near-death experiences and grief counseling and all of that kind of stuff, very, very classically educated, so he knows a lot of, and a medical doctor, knows a lot about the philosophers and all this stuff. He's talking about how we use nonsense in language when we're delivering bad news or we're not sure what's going on or we're trying to tell something to a child and things like that, and all these ways we use nonsense. And that he was working with this doctor of linguistics who had just moved from Berkeley, California, to Athens, Georgia, and they were going to try to prove the afterlife by tracking the language patterns of people who are actively dying. Because when people are dying, a lot of times they see angels, a lot of times they see their dead people, and it gets a little bit confusing. And when Keith was dying, because he got very addicted to pain pills and they made him hallucinate and it was just really chaotic, but so I could stay connected to him, I just engaged in nonsense conversations with him. He's hallucinating and I would just buy into his hallucinations. Otherwise, we'd be having this thing like, no, George Bush isn't sitting over there in the chair. You know, it was like, but not that, what, who cares if he's there or he's not there? Let's just pretend he's there, like we're watching a TV show. And it was interesting because when I did that, his sister came down and saw me talking about all this crazy stuff with him and thought that I had drugged him and was trying to kill him and called the police. It was interesting. I don't know how I knew to just talk nonsense with him, but it kept us deeply connected, and it helped him, and it's why we're so connected now. And it's exactly what Raymond Moody's conference and this work in the Final Words Project was about, even though I had never heard of it before. So he wanted me to get in touch with this woman, Lisa Smart, and work with her. So I wasn't quite sure because she was from Berkeley, and it's very, very, it's a totally different culture than redneck Florida, and I sometimes get overwhelmed by people. But her and I, too, I should have known that Raymond Moody wouldn't have been working with her if he hadn't had that same kind of connection. So we connected the same way each of us had connected with Raymond, decided that we needed to do more than just research. We needed to start a foundation and really help people know how to sit a bedside vigil with someone who's dying and talk to them and hopefully share the experience, you know, so that, you know, if they it's their mother who died in 1966 is sitting in the chair, you know, honor that. So one of the things I say is that when people are dying, it's sort of like, what would you do when you were at a wedding? You know, would you put the TV on? That's one thing that happens when I go into hospice rooms all the time is the TV's on. How are you going to have meaningful conversation? That's what you do at home when you want to escape the person is you go put the TV. Everyone goes in their room and watches their own TV. So they're watching infomercials, time that's just is full of, you know, it's like Easter, you know, the angels, you know, there's angels and maybe Jesus and all these ascended masters and dead people and everything in the room. And you're watching reruns of the Golden Girls. It's just like, would you do that at a wedding? You know, and then a lot of times it becomes about the, and I don't even know what you call the people that aren't the people who are dying. We don't even have words for it. They're not the survivors because no one died yet, and it's not a TV show. They're not, we call them grievers. We don't even have words for, you know, they're the alive people, and the dead, you know, we don't even have language to describe something that happens to every single person. You know, we have hundreds of words to describe things that might happen to a small group of people, but we don't even have language that wraps around this experience that we can be sure everyone is going to go through. So it got even bigger because Dr. Smart and the Mermaid and Dr. Moody wanted to do a scientific study of what people's final words were. But what she found out when she went to hospices, she thought everybody was just going to be like, oh, yeah, we'll do that. But it's like, no, we're not going to let you go in there and put a tape recorder in there because there's privacy issues and there's HIPAA and there's rules. And these people don't even think the person's dying. So we can't talk about final words because they don't even know they're dying. They think they're at the Marriott. And we realized that in order to be able to capture these samples of people's final words, that we were really going to have to educate not just the survivors, we'll call, for lack of a better term, not the people who were dying, not just the, you know, even the paleontology and the hospice community was going to have to kind of be educated as to why this is so important and how magical it could be for people to share the experience, you know, to share the experience. How wonderful would it be if when you were dying, you know, just like when you're born, you come out of your mother's womb, which is a safe, beautiful, warm, cozy place, into a room full of people who just welcome you with love and all of this stuff. What if we could kind of create a same sort of thing when you're on your way to or your afterlife or wherever you choose to go, you know, with everybody on the same page celebrating this person's life like they're the bride, and then maybe the survivors are the family of the bride and the dead people are the family of the groom, and just, you know, treat it like the other major passages we have in our life. So that's what we've been doing, is trying to, you know, raise the awareness of how to share space with someone who's dying and have meaningful conversations. Because, you know, a lot of times people, they've not even been talking to the person who's dying.
They're afraid.
Families don't do so well. You know, they might not have been talking because they were estranged, but it was like, oh, my God, I got to go because, you know, I've got to tell her I'm sorry or something like that, you know. Or people feel like they have to have difficult conversations like, oh, yeah, you know, I know you thought that your dad was your dad, but really it was the postman or something like that. None of that stuff really has to be talked about. We know some of that stuff can be handled once the person's a dead person, you know, and actually some of those conversations are a lot more healing and loving after at least one of the two people involved in the conversation is going through a life review. But we certainly can't take it out to the general public with that sort of, you know, we've got to be gentle about this because we're in sort of uncomfortable and unfamiliar territory. But instead of sitting there watching TV, and if you don't feel like you can tell your mother how much you love her because you never have and there's strained relations, maybe you could tell the nurse who walks into the room, you know, that your mother was a really good gardener or your mother made the best apple pie. There's something, even if your mother was the biggest alcoholic and the town slut and whatever, she made a good apple pie, you know, something. There's something. Go ahead, because hearing is the last sense to go. So those kind of conversations, instead of the Golden Girls on TV or an infomercial, what's on sale at but if you act before midnight tonight, you know, we really could create a dying experience like it used to be when people, before we institutionalized and removed ourselves from the dying process. So there's more too, but I'm going to go find my little air hose here and get some air and let you say something.
Okay. I'm wondering, Amy, for those that don't know that they're dying, those people that just die in a freak accident, no warning at all, what about the words they have said, not knowing that they were going to die? Are those just as important? Do you know what I'm saying?
Everything's important. Everything. Go ahead.
But do you think that, I mean, it becomes such as my friend's father died the other day, and the last thing she remembers him saying to her in the hospital was, she got up from a chair, and he said, "Lisa, what do you need?" And that was the last thing he said to her. And to me, you know, and I know people's last words are so ominous after they die, no matter what they might have said, "Can I have a cheeseburger?" But usually it's not that. Usually it's something, and I know it becomes ominous because of the way that they go on to die. But when he said to her, "Lisa, what do you need?" Now, she was just getting up to go to the restroom. But I took it as, "Yes, Lisa, what do you need?" And so I see, like, you know, maybe because I'm a punk and everything's symbolic to me. But, okay, and Raven is saying in the chat room, "My daughter's last words were to thank me for taking her to the doctors." Okay, so, you know, is there something in someone that, do you believe that people know when they're going to pass, for starters?
I believe their souls know. I believe their souls know. I do not believe that they know. Because one thing I noticed is that the human will to live is so strong that many people think that they are going to cheat death. I can't tell you how, and the people around them think that they're going to get better. As long as there's like someone in scrubs around, they think they're going to get better. They do not think healing is going to require leaving the body. But I believe that their souls know. And you can't, you know, physically speaking, you can see things. There's usually like a burst of energy 24 hours before they start going into a more active death. And that's when a lot of family members get confused. And they think, oh, they're getting better. But, yeah, they're getting better because that's when they're starting to, their spirit's starting to leave. They spend, as they're in active dying, they spend more time on the other side already. And so while physically his ego, which is part of the body, thought that he was going to live, soul was already experiencing, you know, and Lisa, what do you need? You know, she might have thought it was because she was getting up and, you know, and going like, what do you need right here this second? Like, are you looking for a pen or water or something? You know, but how profound is it? Lisa, what do you need? You know, what do you need? And that's where we have to start using the law, the rules of linguistics and things to sort of look at what these words mean. And like you're talking about being a poet, look at the symbology of those words, because the timing of all of this, you know, is all divine timing. So our souls know it. And a lot of, I've noticed men more than women. Women, because, you know, women like to nest and men like to hunt and gather. Men like to die alone. Keith died when I was in the bathroom. Many men die when their loved ones are in the bathroom or running down to the cafeteria to get something to eat or something like. So, Hopefully that answers the question. But whatever those final words are, they truly are like a gift, and they start, if you can start looking at them as a gift coming from, you know, the dying person's soul, which is the soul's the part that's connected to, you know, the we are one part, so it's divine, that over time, those words, as off base or as nonsensical as they may be, are going to become magical and, you know, and be as beautiful as, you know, as someone writing a sonnet or something like that.
Right, right.
So it's just really a map, but we miss so much. We miss so much of it, because when people get involved in, say, caregiving, or when, you know, someone's dying, it all becomes about the physical. You know, look at how we take people's vital signs, like, you know, every hour they come in to take your vital, you know, it's such a shrine to our bodies.
Right.
And the rest of the part that's really beautiful, on, you know, where heaven is coming down to earth, we ignore. Or we attribute to the fact, oh, I must be tired because I think I just saw Jesus. Or we don't lean into it. We don't lean into it, you know. It's not going to take all the pain away, and it's not going to turn this into, like, we're going to start having cheerleaders and marching bands come in and, you know, have parades over to the other side. But there's so much we could do that would bring us comfort, and bring the person who's dying comfort, and give us a glimpse, as to what happens when we leave our bodies. So
right.
Then, real quick, I want to, there's a new step, there's a new twist to this, and it's interesting because I was told many times in the past 3 years I was going to be doing something like really big with death and dying. I was like, you know, yeah, I'm a hospice. And they're like, no, it's really big. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross is here. And I'm like, whatever. It's, you know, because we're all skeptics. But like I said, when your number gets called and you're on assignment, you know, you're on assignment. So last night I went to down in Orlando working with my boss, and this woman who I know from Facebook, and I don't even know why I know her, but you know how the Facebook friends are, was doing a thing with Bill Guggenheim. He wrote the book, Talking to Heaven. It was about 15 years ago, and he talks about the different types of after-death communication. She's a hypnotist who's going to do meditation with people so that they could be their own, so that they could have their own direct after-death communications with their loved ones, you know, as opposed to going to a medium. Because when you go to a medium, it's a different thing, and we'll talk about that. I'm going in too many directions. And she did these beautiful guided meditations, and she knows how to make these CDs, and she's really professional, and she had a big client base. And I was like, Diane, I got to tell you, I'm working with Raymond Moody. And she looks at me and she goes, what? You know, like, it was like, why? It's so obvious that it's like divine, that this really was supposed to happen. And I said, what if we made some guided meditation CDs that people could use while they're sitting with people that were dying, and, you know, would help create a shared space so it doesn't feel so lonely for everybody. Because, you know, you've got these people with two different agendas or multiple different agendas. What if we created these meditation, guided meditation tapes with beautiful music, like, you know, like the music we were listening to earlier with Mona and stuff like that. And, you know, you're a licensed hypnotist and a therapist, you know, a social, whatever, you know, she's got the credentials and stuff like that, that would create a shared space of, you know, the dead people, the dying person, and these people that are soon to be survivors. And, you know, and it wouldn't be like real heavy duty, but it would just sort of be a way to gather these three people from three, in three different dimensions. They're really in three different dimensions, three groups of people, three different dimensions, and create an all meet in the middle and help, you know, and kind of help people get to the other side, like the Pied Pipers in a loving way. And, you know, create this memorable, positive experience. So that just happened last night. So it's just, you know, the momentum. It's obvious that the time is right for this because the universe is bringing people in. And there's such a need. There's just such a need. I see these people and everyone just looks confused. The dead person's like holding on because the people that we don't have a name for yet don't want the people to die, and they can feel it. And we might say, oh, it's okay to go, but we're like projectile tears are coming out. We're going, it's okay to go. No, it's not. It's okay to go. And then going back to your friend, what is it that you need? You know, maybe what she needed right then was to know that, you know, that there were angels in the room too, and not just nurses, and that this wasn't going to be the end, that it was just going to be different, like when your kids go to college or move out of the house or something like that. What if we could just give people, just end the finality of death and give people some hope? So if you didn't say thing, if you didn't say what you wanted to say, it's like no big deal. It'll be easier to tell you. You know how sometimes when you're winding up a conversation, you really have to go. You're like, oh, well, I'll send you an email or I'll send you a text or something. You know,
right?
The idea to be continued, as opposed to, you know, just the curtain dropping and this huge void where there once was a life.
Right. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, that's it. I was a sigh.
Well, you know, Amy, that my dad has Alzheimer's, and you've donated a tremendous amount to me, and I can't thank you enough for that. I mean, I'm just so blessed to have all these people helping. Bree, Stan, Chris, everybody. I mean, it's just been so wonderful. However, okay, so I was talking to Renee Richards one day about my dad, and we were talking about elementals. And she sees a lot of elementals on a daily basis. And her mom also has Alzheimer's. So she relayed a story that she was with her mom, and the mom said, oh, look at that cute, you know, that little creature, blah, blah, blah. So Renee said, and so she goes, I didn't know what was going to happen when I turned around. I didn't know what I was going to see. But lo and behold, she saw the creature. And the creature was there. The mother could see it because her mind was altered, you know, I guess for lack of a better term. And so I said, you know, my father often sees, like I'll be sitting next to him and he'll say, oh, there goes Corrine outside. And I'll say, I'm right here, Dad. No, I said, who's outside? He goes, you are. Who's to say I'm not out there? And he's not seeing a different timeline. And
exactly.
So, yeah. So it's very interesting. What I mean, it's an awful disease. You know, that robs you of so much. But you know, I also believe that maybe they are. You know, they're connecting to the other realms that we normally don't connect to. So I don't know. I just thought that was so interesting.
No, it's not. I don't know at all. I have goosebumps, and I have to go channel my inner Native American, because it's so powerful. It's so important. You know, time doesn't. We know these things theoretically. We talk about them all the time, but then when it's time for them to for us to really, it's like, well, what? Maybe, but yeah. Maybe it doesn't matter if it's true or false. This is what goes back to Raymond Moody's logic of nonsense. Would you rather think of your father as just a fraction of what he used to be, hallucinating, or that he's more evolved version of what he used to be, and he's elevated to a dimension where time is no longer linear, and he sees his younger self and his daughter, little Kareem, outside? And would you rather, you know, would Renee rather think of her mother as losing her mind and no longer knows, who does it care if we don't know who any, you know, they say, they don't even know who I am anymore. That's just the ego. Who does it care who it is? If you can share space with that person, and
right.
you can share space by being, you know, by going to his place where time isn't linear, or going to a vibration where just a place in your mind where you see these things like a child, which is gonna make everyone involved more peaceful, and you know, bring peace and not pleasure. Those still aren't their words, and I don't want to turn this into like, oh yeah, it's just the best thing ever. Your dad has Alzheimer's. That is so cool. I wish my mom did, because then we could talk about, you know, it's still very sad, and we're supposed to be sad and feel sorrow for what has been, losing what has been. But with the time that you have left, wouldn't it be interesting? And, you know, who even, you know, when did they even come up with, do you think people just started getting Alzheimer's, or did we just get to a point in our world where we couldn't have people who didn't know who we were and, you know, saw fairies and saw children? Because it disrupted this world that we've created. Maybe the people did that all the time, but they believed it. But with allopathic medicine, we just treat symptoms. You know, we treat all these symptoms. We think, oh, horrible. This will stop the hallucinations. Well, what do we get in return? Diarrhea. Well, maybe I'll take the hallucinations. You know, it's like, we've become so far removed from even allowing ourselves. Like, what would happen if you believed that and it turned out it was just wrong? You would still have some peace, perhaps, but our egos are so worried about being duped, you know, these people who
right.
don't. I don't believe in that. I don't, you know, it's sleight of hand or whatever. That's just the ego so fearful that it's going to be, you know, deceived or, but if we lean into those vulnerabilities, and I don't know what, must have been some kind of divine intervention that told me to do this with Keith and just talk his language and not get in these arguments. No, I'm here, you know, that allowed us to, you know, stay connected until I went to the bathroom and he decided to die. And like about an hour before he died, I've told this on a couple of shows before, I actually like went into, But I thought they were fixing him. And then all of a sudden he's in hospice. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, no, I think he's going to die. And I was like, yikes. And I went into the light, and saw Jesus. And he was like really crucified and bloody and everything. But there's also his eyes were like glistening, like they were really, really bright and glistening. And I felt like so much love. And I've never forgot. That's the part that I've never really forgotten how gory Jesus was or how much love I felt. And what it was I knew he had to die, and I was like, fine, I'll just go take you there. You know, if you're not going to go, I'll just drive you there. And why I the visuals that I saw were so, you know, this gory Jesus instead of, you know, the hunky Jesus was because he's really Catholic, and his Catholic fear, he thought he was going to like Catholic heaven, so I had to go find his heaven, you know, and it was just bizarre, and I still haven't really made sense of the whole thing, but more and more is being revealed. But if we did think, and that's why it's so important to me, and I'm getting my bonus this week, and that I'm going to be able to send you more money, because it is so important for humanity. It's not, I'm not doing this for you. I mean, I am doing this for you. There's a lot of people I wouldn't do it for. Not that evolved. But it's also like we're doing it for humanity. And I hope that you understand that part of it when people are giving this, donating this money so that you can care for your dad. Like when, by you caring for your dad, we're all going to get something out of this. We're all going to get, we're going to maybe return to a world where we don't put our elderly in diapers and nursing homes and, you know, wait for somebody who's making $7 an hour and has personal problems that no human person could, you know, maybe we won't have to do that anymore, you know?
Well, that would, you know, that would be wonderful, except that is like one, you know, Amy, that is one of the hugest problems in this country is being able to afford to keep your loved ones at home. Now, if I chose to put my father in a nursing home, it would be absolutely free. But guess what? I refuse to do that.
Nothing is free. And if you think of what it's going to let, you know, fortunately I had a little glimpse of this because, like I said, Keith's dad and my brother both, their dads were really kind, and they did some time in nursing homes, and it was so horrifying what I saw. And it wasn't horrifying like scary, like dangerous, you know. It was just inhumane. It was just inhumane. The places are devoid of love.
They are.
The energy is like low vibration. It's like being, you know, and it's not because the people are, you know, oh, they're, you know, it's just not the way we're supposed to do it. We institutionalized death and getting old. And, you know, you have to look at, I mean, again, this was one of the many gifts that was bestowed on me that I didn't know was a gift at the time, was right before Keith got sick, I got breast cancer. Before that, I made a lot of money, and I had a lot of things, and lots of the things were really nice, and many of them were really expensive. And what I thought was a necessity, I'm embarrassed to even tell people. You know, it was like, you know, like, Mercedes convertible. I have to have a Mercedes convertible because I live in Florida, you know. Right. And I have to spend $300 a month on my hair because I'm a professional. You know, it's like, no, you don't. You could put magic marker in your hair, or you could just, you know, cut it with toenail clip. You know, it's amazing how we decided that we needed all of these things. And after Keith being in a nursing home for like he got kicked out because he's very ornery. It was so funny. They kicked me out because they thought that I was upsetting him. And then when I wasn't there, they became the target of his rage. And they were like, can you come get him? And it's like, well, I would. But remember, we got in that fight because he wouldn't give me the keys. So I don't have a car. And that's who'll come get you. And I was like, I called my mother. I said, I don't care if you and I have to sit on the side of the road, like you in a hospital bed, and I'll just sit on the curb. You're not going to a nursing home. And lo and behold, 2 days after my brother's funeral, my mother ended up in a situation. And I've had to become her caregiver. And now it's not as bad as, or progressed, let's say, as like what you're dealing with. But we, her and I didn't even get along, and it's been a wonderful opportunity. We've had so much healing has taken place that would have never taken, we could have gone to the best there. We could have gone on Dr. Phil, we could have had Dr. Phil, Oprah, we could have had all of them there. And we could not have had as much healing as has taken place this time where I don't live with her, but I spend a good deal of time over there and I bring her her meals and, you know, and you don't know how much amends you can make by not being disgusted by bodily fluids and things like that. That will make many more amends than financially paying people back or buying someone flowers or a card or anything. You know, is to just accept them in a state that the rest of our cult, you know, our popular culture or something would say is unacceptable. And
right. Yeah, you know, absolutely. Yeah. And I just want to say, going through this journey with my dad, I have encountered the most brilliant of angels, and I have encountered some of the worst people that I have ever, I didn't even know people could be like that they have been. And I'm going to say this, I know I'm on air and it's public, but I said to my oldest brother, who lives in California, my two brothers live in California, and I said, you know, we need help. And they both have a good living. They make a good living. We need help, and my older brother said, why should I support? He didn't raise me, so I would support him. So listen, so it's more important for him to go on vacations 4 times a year, have the best of everything, than it is to make sure his father is comfortable and clean and eating good food and so on and so forth. So, you know, Amy, this is something I will never understand. For me, it is no sacrifice. It is not a sacrifice. I would do it all over again. And I went through this with my poor mom, and it is not a sacrifice. I don't care if I go on vacation. People are like, oh, stop being a martyr. It's not, I'm not being a martyr. It's like natural to me to take care of someone who loved me into my being, for God's sake. And so, I mean, I have seen the worst of people and the best of people going through this, but I just will never understand the selfish, me attitude of even family members. I just don't get it. But you know what? I also got to step back, just as Raven said in the chat room, and she said, I wanted to blame the doctor for the misdiagnosis on her daughter, but I know he's only human. I agree with her. I would have had a very hard time with that, Marguerite. I would have had a very hard time with that. However, we also have to remember, I have to remember that to sit here and say, you are so wrong, you are so empty, you are so shallow, that's me judging him for his choices. So I haven't, I guess, you know, I look at myself like, well, I'm not an angel yet. I'm still human, and I'm still judging you for not doing what I consider to be the right thing. But, anyways, I just had to say that.
Well,
because
we're
going to
judge because we're human. We're going to judge because we're human. And, you know, so often I see, especially people, you know, all in our little love and light set, will say something really judgmental, and then we'll say, no judgment. You know, it's become like the new just kidding. We're supposed to judge because we're human. We're down here on this experiment or lesson, fact-finding mission or whatever we want to call it. So that's just you being human. But then in the moments when your vibration's higher, if you shift it around and you, okay, instead of being, and it's real easy, and I, you know, I do it too. I mean, I'm like, I can't believe I have, nobody ever helps me. Why does this always happen, you know, with my car, you know, broken down cars and all this stuff. It's like, and that's just human. But in the times that I'm in a higher place and my chakras are aligned or whatever we want to say it, what if, like, how lucky we are that we were there to share this experience, and how unfortunate it is for your brother to be, you know, sitting on the beach in Hawaii or, you know, on a cruise or whatever, filling his hole inside of him that, you know, with a bunch of shit, you know, with
right.
crap. You know, that, you know, you're not going to say that all the time. And if you were saying that all the time, you would probably be just, you know, kidding yourself. But, in, you know, instead of feeling, well, after you feel angry, to just sit in that space, at, you know, because a lot of times we get angry because it's such a, because it feels like, it empowers us, you know, the outrage, we feel powerful, we feel like we've been empowered and we're standing in, you know, and we've got all this decency and all of this stuff, but and it feels really good to yell, like, stop, because I'm so, you know, it makes you feel really alive. It's like an adrenaline rush. The anger's like an adrenaline rush. If you can sit in the space after the anger and feel gratitude for the, you know, feel gratitude for the fact that, you know, you were chosen for this important assignment. I mean, it's such a privilege
right.
to change an adult diaper of someone. You know, it's such a privilege to, you know, I was sitting there, this one time my brother, it was, you know, it was just this biologically unsightly mess, and I just sat there and cleaned it up, and I didn't care, and, you know, and he was embarrassed, but he could see I wasn't even paying attention. I could care less. It was no different than, you know, you drop the newspaper on floor, and him and I didn't get along either, and it was just such
yeah.
a profound moment that I realized that I had, was just really privileged. Now, I can't say that 2 hours later I wasn't, you know, whining to my mother that I couldn't take this anymore and that it wasn't fair because I'm human and we're naturally going to gravitate back to ego because it's so dense. But if we
right.
can... you know, if we can escape that dense, if we can escape that density, you know, escape, you know, when we, how we walk away from a crowd sometimes and just get a breath of air.
Right.
And feel the blessings that we're getting from this very difficult situation. And the blessing that you're giving us by us being able to to give you money that we would otherwise spend on Starbucks or, oh, I need some more mascara because I left my mascara, you know,
right.
at my mom's and that's a mile away, so I'll just go buy a new one, you know, or just crap.
Right.
You know, or we could give it, you know, give it to you and, you know, for, you know, in the Bible where they talk about tithe, you know, I don't even know, Lord only knows what they meant, but, you know, there's basic, and laws of attraction and all of the basic spiritual laws are all the same. To get, you have to give. So what a great gift you've given all us so that we can give, so that we can see what's important, you know, and especially like the people, when I see people like Jan, and she's not here, but, you know, and she has no money, but she was like, spent 2 days trying to get you this, you know, this bit of money, you know, and it's like, wow.
I know. And that's
doing
see,
for
but that,
people.
That, but that makes me feel bad because, well, that, you know, Jan is such a sweetheart. And I think I sent her a purple energy angel, and I think she felt like she had to, like, pay me back. I didn't send it for her to send me money. I wanted her to have it and use it, you know. But
but those no, are but other people's, you know, that, and we yeah. probably shouldn't be talking about her on the radio, but it's like you're giving, you know, you're giving us an opportunity to see what's important. And by you doing this for your father, you're giving all of humanity hope, you know, because you know how you feel when you're there, you know, when you're in a good space and, you know, you're not thinking about, you know, when you're not in ego, you're not in the density of the ego, how magical it feels. It feels as magical as it did like when you were little Corrine out in the yard when and still free.
And
it feels
also.
Like you're alive. It feels like you're alive. It doesn't, you know, it's like, yeah, sure, it would be nice to be at this resort and get an assault rub or whatever else you do, you know. But is that going to make you feel more alive?
No.
After a while, it's probably gonna make, you're going to be like, oh, wow, that is, it's like we chase that buzz. It'll, you get like a euphoric rush, like, oh, this is great. And then you go, you know, back to the same thing. But the
well, just as you said, yeah, just as you just said, I am giving you the opportunity to help, and that is a gift to you. That is my father's gift to me. If we talk
exactly.
about the soul, our soul plans, and that we plan everything before we come here, then it is true that he knew he was going to have to go through this. He was going to have to, you know, stand there at, naked as I wash him. And maybe somewhere inside himself, he's embarrassed. And, but you know what? I just sing and I hum along. I make him laugh. And I feel I am so blessed, Amy, in the way that, not that this whole show's got to be about my dad, but my dad has
always. No, it's
always,
important, though. It's hugely
yeah,
important.
Yeah, he's always been the greatest father anybody could ever have. And I say, you know, all my friends are like, oh, my God, their fathers were alcoholics. They were abusive. They, you know, they did this, they did that. And so one day I'm talking to my friends and they're like all talking about their fathers and we are watching that. What is that movie? To Kill a Mockingbird. And so, you know, Gregory Peck is the father. So my friend said, who has a father like that? I said, I do. And I always did. I mean, he's like, he's an angel, like from day one. I mean, I just, so, you know, and I, this is why I cannot understand my brothers and one of my sisters, there's five of us, you know, my father busted his freaking balls his whole life to bring us up and give us the best of everything. And this is what, I'm sorry, I'm going off topic here.
No, this is right on topic. This is so on topic because, you know, going back to the hospice thing, I see these other situations where people like your brother, they get a call, and your father's in hospice. So they come darting across the country and go sit, and they'll sit there like tapping their foot. I'll have people say to me, how long is this going to take? Because we were going to go to the beach, or how long is this going to take? Because our flight's back on Tuesday. Will we be dead by Tuesday? And it's like, instead of being, you know, it depends what mood I'm in. Sometimes I feel like, excuse me. But instead of being like outraged, I'm just sad. I'm sad for them. I'm sad for them that they're missing. Because I know that over time, like, they're going to have remorse. After it's over, they're going to have remorse and regret, or else they're going to come scooting in there and sitting there, and it's too late, and they're, like, overwhelmed, like, but, you know, and they want to say all these things, but then a person might get a coma, so, you know, and even the people who are in comas, my friend Isabel is just amazing, hope she gets on one of y'all's shows, she has young kids. She is a medium, spirit medium, but she stopped the medium stuff. She got sick of telling people when they were getting paid and when they were getting laid. She does her spirit mediumship to pull out messages from people who are in comas and deliver messages to the family. Like, she's a she's a communicator. Because that's all it is these different levels. So, you know, it's unfortunate, you know, and again, you know, somebody's talking about the inheritance and stuff, and I had the same thing.
Oh, my God, I know.
The family was so horrible to me. They were taking stuff out of our house. I'm like, that's mine.
No kidding.
You know, he wasn't, you know, we had only been together we were friends in college, and we were only together a short time. So, you know, she had been to this house before I had been there, and it was all complicated. She's taking my shit.
Yeah.
And like,
yeah.
And called the police and told them I stole his car. It's like, what are you even? But that was how that was the only way she could deal with it. There was the only way she could deal with this. She couldn't get to a place where she could just sit there with her brother in a diaper talking nonsense and share space. She was upset by that. So she had to call the police and steal my shit and, you know, and just go to a really ugly place. And people, we see it all time.
Yeah, such as my friend, I won't say her name, but so before her dad died, her father's probably worth a couple $1 million, I'd say. So the brother, this girl's brother, went to the father in the nursing home and had him sign all the money over to him while the father was out of it. Even though the brother is very, very, very wealthy himself. So my friend was like, well, you know, I don't know what to do. I mean, should I hire a lawyer? So anyways, they're fighting, you know. So my friend just said, forget it. I don't, you know, he can do what he wants, whatever. And I don't want to fight with my brother. He's the only living person in the family, besides my dad. So then, I'm like cracking up, Amy, because I'm like, oh my God. So, but even though this guy was worth a couple $1 million, he was in a nursing home and they're fighting over his money. And I'm saying to myself, oh my God. So in my case, you know, there'll be nothing to inherit. The only thing to inherit would be, bills that have piled up over the years. We've gotten rid of many of them, but there's absolutely not a dime to inherit. But you know what? And I just said this in the chat room, I have inherited the greatest attributes anybody could inherit from someone, from my father. That's what I've inherited. And that is more than any freaking amount of money can do. And this is what my brother doesn't understand. And people don't understand this. You know, they want the money. They come fishing around for the money. I just don't get it. I just don't get it, you know?
But aren't you glad that you don't get it? Even though you're tired and even though it would be nice to walk away from it all, how lucky are you that the universe entrusted you with such an important task, and not just the important task, the care that you're giving your father, but the important task of just how I've gotten just so obsessed with and dying and dead people that you're going to change the world, because somebody's going to hear about this and say, oh, wait, I don't have to put my mother in a nursing home. Corinne did it. You know, I look at myself and I look at, like, you know, breast cancer. It was really complicated. There was a lot of surgeries, a lot of chemotherapy, and a lot of financial loss associated with it. But
so at what point,
before
Amy,
when
you got breast cancer, mm-hmm. is that when you really, so to speak, woke up?
No, I didn't wake up. I didn't wake up until I saw bloody Jesus with the sparkling eyes when Keith was dying. I guess I woke up over the time that he was sick, because we were, even the year before he got sick, I had a restraining order on him. We did not get along. But fate intervened, and for some reason, the day the restraining order expired, I was still living in South Carolina. He had gone back down to Florida. He calls me to yell at me because, you know, he hadn't been able to yell at me for a year. We end up talking for 12 hours, and, you know, that's where, like, the fate and destiny, we can do all we want with our free will, but the fate and destiny kicks in. The breast cancer, there was just so much loss, and I tried to keep it all together. I tried to keep working. I destroyed my professional reputation because, you know, chemo makes you crazy. I didn't take good care of myself. Lost all the stuff. A couple years before that, one time I was driving around, I guess this was about 10 years ago now, but there used to be, you know, remember the show, The OC? It was one of those. Anyway, all right. The OC was on. It was going to be on in 20 minutes, and we were out. We weren't going to be able to get back to where we were staying. I checked into a hotel to watch the OC. That is how whatever I was. That's how much I was your brother or whatever. You know, I was just, you know, it just sounds absurd right now, but it made perfectly good sense. We'll just check into the hotel and watch it, because we want to watch it, you know, I want to watch it. It's just like, everyone does.
You were one of the people that I make fun of today.
Got to watch it. I've got to see what these people are doing. I think that I can't even remember the people's names now, or it's going to break up with Kelly or whatever her name is. We've got to get there right now. And, you know, and then the breast cancer came to strip me down and make me humble, take away all the stuff. And, you know, and then there was like this period of turmoil. And it's like a fairy tale. Like, if you think about it, everyone's life is a fairy tale. We never get to the happily ever after. But the monkeys have to fly, and you have to, like, you know, eat the poison apple, or, you know, get lost in the woods, or, you know, like a whole bunch of shitty stuff has to happen before you get to the happily ever after. Look at how many of us just follow, you know, avoid uncomfortableness and discomfort and yucky stuff and, you know, brothers shitting in your car and things like that. Well, if you avoid, then you never got to the creepy flying monkey stuff. You're never going to get the happily ever after.
Right. I mean, and some people would argue that some people sail through life easily. They always have good luck. But, you know, I tend to think that those people, well, first of all, nothing is as it appears to be. We know that. We don't know how these people are suffering, you know, or what hell they might have that we can't see. However, I think if you go through life easily and you're like, oh, blah, 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 I'm not saying you have to be a miserable jerk, but I think that you're not really thinking about other people so much when you're just sailing through. And so how do you ever get to that next plateau?
Well, that's the thing that I started realizing. It's like, and, you know, from doing a lot of this spiritual work and from getting a lot of different readings and things like that, all the blessings that have come from this, it's like, what if all of this is work? Is truly working out karma? It's not punishment. It's just the energetic laws of karma, the unavoidable consequences of cause and effect. And maybe maybe I won't have to come back. Maybe I'll get to be an angel and just sit up, or maybe I'll get to be like Christina's Eli and just sit up there and tell people what to do. Working it, or even better, get to go be one of those people like August Goforth was talking, when you get to be in that committee where you get to even spend some of your time with angels and, you know, and do all this stuff, you know.
Right.
And then maybe some of these other people who aren't getting involved are maybe they're not assholes. You know, our egos can still think they're assholes, and, you know, we don't have to think this all the time. But if we just think some of these things just for a fleeting second, that we believe it, just like, well, maybe my father did see younger Karina, and maybe Renee's mother did see the little people. If we just believe it for a second, then that maybe your brother isn't an asshole, maybe his sister isn't.
But Amy, listen.
They're just a newer soul or something.
He must be brand new, because then he even came back at me with Jesus, because he's a born again now, and he comes back. I go, oh. Yeah, Louis. His name's Louis. I said, so when I saw him when he came home this last time, I said, oh yeah, you're so into the Bible now. You know, remember that story about Jesus, where Jesus went in and he's faced with a bunch of lepers, and Jesus said, oh, why should I help you losers? Because that's what he's basically saying. You know what I mean?
Right, exactly. Or maybe like when Jesus was like, that bloody Jesus that I saw was on the cross, and instead of going, oh, my God, how does this happen? I can't believe they're doing this to me. He tried to help the people next to him, you know,
exactly.
Even though
yeah.
he was in a heap of shit at the time, you know, not their time, you know, and certainly there's going to be karmic repercussions. First of all, there's going to be immediate repercussions, you know, the guilt and remorse and low vibrational type stuff.
Yeah.
But surely there's going to be karma, and, you know, and the more we learn about what karma really is, instead of like karma's like, you know, shitty happens to him, but it's just unavoidable.
The whole punishment, though, Amy, is being who they are.
Let's think of like your brother having a pat. Let's say your brother that we have, Sandra Sneed, remember the God scribe on, and your brother calls in and goes, you know, in a couple, like three lifetimes from now, calls in and goes, oh, I was wondering if I could get a reading. And he'll go, well, you know, and recounts this story. And at that point in time, he will be a little bit more evolved. And can you imagine hearing that's what you did? You know, going through the life review that we go through, which is not judgment and punishment and who goes to here and who goes there, but where you, from what I understand, experience your entire life from the perspective of the people who it affected. So can you imagine what it's going to feel like when your brother goes through his life review, which we pretty much understand to be, you know, happen regardless of which door number one, two, or three you're going to go to on the other side, if we're going to pretend we're all going to different places. Can you imagine how painful that's going to be? You know, you know, and it's not painful, like, you know, heart-wrenching pain, but can you imagine the spiritual, can you imagine the you know, and if you start thinking of these things in terms of that, it starts making more sense. It's interesting, my daughter, who, she's an interesting story, but she kind of believes it, well, she believes it because she's just like me, but she doesn't want to believe it, and she's getting married to this guy who's like fresh paint. I mean, his first time down, second at best, just clueless and no empathy. And that's where you get empathy is from. And so she tries to be that way as well, but it doesn't work. So she's not very good at it. So there was something going on. It was something, one of her sorority sisters in a wedding, and, you know, it was like a pretty low vibration, like, oh, God, she's going to be on. We got to check into a hotel. But instead of just saying, okay, well, she goes, well, no, I think I'm going to do it this way because I don't want to die and have to go to heaven and sit in a class for, you know, because when we hear about all these, you go to class and you learn and you all these kind of things. I don't want to go to heaven and have to sit in a class for, you know, it's like how you decide if you're going to pay the money, the ticket, you get a ticket, and you decide whether you're going to go to driver's ed for two nights or pay the ticket. She was kind of saying, nah, I don't want to sit in class. I'll just suck it up now and, you know, and take the higher road. So,
right.
You know, it's just sometimes we make this stuff sometimes. Sometimes we talk about a lot of this stuff, but we don't talk about it like in the right. We talk about it as like what, like it's like it doesn't apply right now. It doesn't apply. You know, all the spiritual stuff doesn't apply right now because I'm in like a low vibration heap of trouble. So I'm just gonna, you know, go the low vibration way this way, and then I'll, you know, or I'm like quick. Drinking tomorrow or something like that. But, you know, it's in a lot of these really troublesome, times that some of the greatest gifts come. And, you know, speaking of your brother, the born-again Christian, you know, look what Jesus had. Look what Jesus had to do. Look what Jesus had to do, you know.
Yeah, I know. It's like, do you know anything?
He had to come down here and put up with. He had to put up with a bunch of stuff. You know, he doesn't know who his father is, and you know, and they're out there in a barn, and you know, these strangers are coming, and you know, smoking pot and bringing their animal, and then he's got to put up with all these people, and then you know. Yeah, so maybe if we just lean into this and go, wow, bring it on, you know, bring it on, bring some more stuff on, and
I know.
And then maybe I'll get to.
Amy, we have about 5 minutes
come back.
Left.
Oh,
we have 5 minutes. We do have a caller. I just want to see, pick it up real quick. Hello, who's this?
Oh, hi. Yeah, my name is Claudia.
Okay. What
Hi, Claudia. What do I want? Oh, I don't know. Are you guys, what? Hello?
Yeah, we're here.
I don't know. Are you doing readings? That's why I called in.
Have you been listening to the show, Claudia? I'm
listening to the show. Yeah. Okay. I kind of came in towards, like, the last 5.5 minutes, so I didn't get the whole show.
Right. So you wouldn't have, we're not doing readings, but Curious Times is starting, like, in 5 minutes, right? What time is it?
Yeah, it's starting. Yeah, go to Curious Times. It's starting in 5 minutes. They're doing readings.
We'll be over there in a minute, and they're doing readings.
Yeah.
Oh, they are. They are. No, but
yeah.
I mean, what were you guys talking about? Because
we're talking about serving your fellow man and how important it is to love one another and to just really keep looking. Don't look for any souvenirs for helping people. Don't look for a great reward.
No.
The reward is doing it itself, and just love one another. And that's the bottom line, I think, you know?
That's right. And I agree.
Yeah.
That's all you need to do is, because I think if you look for reward, I mean, come on, why bother doing good for people? That's not the reason. You know what I mean?
But at the same time, you can understand why people would think that, because that's why we do everything else. You know what I mean? That's kind of why we do, that's why we go to work, and that, you know, at the end of the day. It's just a matter of rethinking. And the really important part that I want to leave everybody with is that don't, you know, you still have an ego, and sometimes you're going to get bogged down in the density and, you know, do these silly human things. But at any given point in time, we can just go back, I thought I could look at this differently, you know, and then change. But, go over to Curious Times. I forget who's on tonight, but I think she has some good readers on.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I love that show. I've listened to some of the folks she has on that show. They're really she has some good people there.
Oh, she's excellent. Yeah, definitely, Claudia.
Yeah.
It's a great show.
I'm going to check. Oh, yeah. And she's on every night, too.
She is.
Every night.
Amazingly, she's on every single night.
I don't know
night.
How she does it.
No, we don't either.
I like her, too.
Yeah, she's cool.
She's so natural.
Well, that's exactly it. None of us know how, but that's exactly, you know, she gives us so much by, she gives us so much, and, you know, hopefully she, you know, when we're doing what our purpose is, it's becomes sort of effortless. So.
Yeah. I agree.
You know what I wanted
to
say, and I know the show is ending, I really think Blog Talk Radio is really bringing a lot of highly spiritual people together, and I think that's a good thing. I love the energy.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah,
it
I
is.
Just love the energy.
Yeah, we're very fortunate.
And isn't it wonderful that all you have to, you don't have to go out, you don't have to get dressed.
No.
You can just turn on that, you know, it's just such a wonderful gift that, you know, you hear of all the bad things of the internet and everything, but what a wonderful gift it is that it can create all these communities of like-minded people.
Definitely.
Okay.
Definitely.
Yeah.
All right, we'll see you over there.
Yeah.
All
right.
We'll see you over there.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Yes, bye-bye.
Amy, I also want to thank you once again for coming on and having this great conversation. Let's do it again.
I can't believe it. The time went so fast. Oh,
it did. It went super fast because we're getting into
there is no time.
Yeah. But we will do it again. We'll schedule a new show, and I'm so excited about that, too. And I loved talking to you tonight, Amy. It was fantastic, and thank you for sharing everything, all your experiences and everything like that. And
well, thanks for having me. And,
sure.
Thank you for everything that you're doing and all your purple plates. I mean, I sleep with mine. We can't let the show go by without talking about purple plates because they're a powerful tool.
They are. They're amazing. And I'm so blessed to even have, you know, stumbled upon the purple plates, but that's another story. But, okay, and thank you, Stan. Thank you, Bree. Thank you, Marguerite and Seer Jane. And I will see you guys soon. And take care of each other, and I know you will. Thank you.
Bye.
My icon, the icon, waiting in the wings to get his wings so he can be an angel and fly. But when he sings, need a shoulder that I can cry on. Am I calm? The icon, my calm, the icon. I need a shoulder that I can cry on. I need a shoulder that I can cry on.